वैसे लेकिन मैंने देखा आप सेंट जेवियर कोलकाता से आपने अपना कॉलेज किया था,
राइट.
आप क्या कोलकाता से हैं या फिर?
यस यार, आई वाज ब्रॉट अप इन कैलकटा.
अब आई आस्क यू दिस वन थिंग, ऑनेस्टली व्हाट डू यू मिस द मोस्ट अबाउट, लाइक समथिंग दैट इज वेरी पर्टिकुलर टू कोलकाता इटसेल्फ, लाइक फ्रेंड्स वगैरह तो ठीक है वो
उचका.
लोग भी कर. यस थैंक यू सो मच. आई एम जस्ट अज्यूमिंग यू एंड आई शेयर द सेम एंगर when someone compares puchka to golgappa or pani puri, like it's not the same thing.
I agree yaar, you can't compare the two, that I agree, no debate there whatsoever.
So hello Prashant, welcome to my podcast Mood Posting Hours, and it's a privilege to have you here.
My pleasure.
But before we get started here, Prashant, I want to ask you one thing. What is the one question that you get asked the most?
Not an easy question, but if I reflect back on my 25 years that I've spent in the finance world, investing, whether it was with Kishore Biyani or Rakesh Jhunjhunwala, one of the most common questions that people keep asking me is which company to invest in, because they all feel investing is so easy, and everybody is over here wanting to get rich quick. Everybody looks either for a tip or something. They may word it differently, but the essence of their question is exactly this: Prashant, which company should I invest in? And it's interesting that question has not changed in the 25 years that I've spent in financial markets here.
Yeah, and I think with the new TV shows and movies which have come up very recently, that question has only grown more frequent.
True, yeah.
So, Prashant, how about we reverse engineer this whole thing? How about instead of telling people that, you know, you should invest in this company, that company, how about we tell them how to build a company that other people would want to invest in?
यार, एज आई से ना, कैसे पकड़ो को उधर से पकड़ो. आंसर विल इमर्ज ब्रॉडली इन दैट सेम जोन, सेम होराइजन. बट यस, दिस इज समथिंग इंटरेस्टिंग. आई हैव डन अ फ्यू पॉडकास्ट एंड अ फ्यू लेक्चर्स, नेवर बीन आस्क्ड टू प्रेजेंट हाउ टू इन्वेस्ट इन अ रिवर्स इंजीनियर्ड मैनर. बट लेट मी ट्राई एंड काइंड ऑफ गिव इट अ शॉट.
सो बिफोर वी गो अहेड, आई वॉन्ट टू गिव यू एन अपॉर्चुनिटी टू इंट्रोड्यूस योर ओन कॉर्पोरेट करियर टू आर ऑडियंस, बिकॉज you know, I think no one can describe yourself better than you can, right? So please.
Thank you, Harsh. Hi, friends. Thanks for listening in. My name is Prashant Desai. I am 49 years. I am a chartered accountant and a cost accountant. I started my career in the financial markets, in the stock markets, way back in 1995. Started my career as equity research head for a firm in Calcutta called United Credit. Worked there for many years, researched and met a lot of companies and management. From there on, I moved and joined a financial communication agency in Calcutta called Trisis Communications, where we used to write research-based annual reports for a lot of Indian corporates like Reliance, Mittal Steel, Balrampur Chini, Lupin, Matrix, so on and so forth. And one of the companies that I used to write annual report was Pantaloon Retail, founded by Kishore Biyani. And I was very close to Mr. Biyani. And in one of those days, I always wanted to move to Bombay because I used to love equity markets. And I told him that I want to move to Bombay. And then he offered me a job. So in 2003, I left Calcutta, came to Bombay and joined Kishore Biyani's Pantaloon Retail as head of investor relations, where my job was to market the Pantaloon stock and raise capital for Kishore Biyani and Pantaloon Retail. I worked with him for 3 years and in one of the placements that we did, one of our large investors was Rakesh Jhunjhunwala. And when Rakesh Jhunjhunwala decided to institutionalize himself, he offered me a job to join him. And I joined Rakesh Jhunjhunwala as head of his research in 2006, worked with him for a couple of years. After that, I left him and moved back to Pantaloon Retail. By that time, Pantaloon Retail had become Future Group. And at that time, I used to look at not just the investor relations, but investing, where we invested in a lot of emerging consumer businesses like Diva and Turtle, so on and so forth. And I was head of investments for a listed company of Future Group called Future Ventures, which is now Future Consumer Products. Subsequent to that, I was seconded on the asset management side of Future Group, which was a joint venture between Kishore Biyani and Sameer Sen. I then moved on to Indivision, the private equity fund, worked there for a few years. I left them and then I joined a technology company in Bombay called Financial Technology, which was the promoter of MCX, Indian Energy Exchange, Dubai Gold and Commodity Exchange, and so on. I joined as president, investor relations and mergers and acquisitions there. I joined FT in December 2012. I went on to become the CEO and MD of FT in 2014, and I led that business for 3 years till 2017. In 2017, I left FT to start my own entrepreneurial journey, where I started India's first and only truly sports brand called Defy. I started this with the former managing director of Puma called Rajiv Mehta. We tried everything. We tried to do our best, but in 3 years' time, unfortunately, the business did not succeed. And we folded the business in August 2019. And then I kind of moved on from there. And I joined Everstone, the private equity firm, which was earlier called Indivision, where I was part, which I was part of. And I joined Everstone in 2019, September. And since then, I'm with Everstone. Currently, I'm seconded into Burger King as head of strategy and investor relations. So yeah, that's been my journey.
Oh, that's a fantastic journey. And that's a very, I like the fact that, you know, you took a lot of risks in your complete journey, Prashant, because I see a lot of stability and you stepping out of your comfort zone. And that is very appreciable. That is very applaudable.
Thanks, Harsh. Thanks. Yeah. So let's try. And one thing I tell people is, yeah, it's important, you know, not just which company you invest in, but who's the person who has started this company and why? The why for me becomes a very important point. And I'll tell you, interestingly, so normally they say you should start a business or become an entrepreneur if, you know, you are passionate about a product, or if you are very passionate about a service, or there is a problem in the world which you think you can solve. And what I have realized is if you don't have any of these, either of these three, chances are that, you know, you may not be able to build a very successful business. Because if you go through the common thread amongst people who have been very successful, they've been passionate about what they are doing. And then there are a lot of people who actually build the business just because they think this business may probably fetch a certain value, or, you know, just because there is an opportunity. There is an opportunity to do 20,000 things. But if you're not passionate about that, at some level, you will try to kind of stumble. So my first point I kind of try and ask is, what problem are you trying to solve in that sense? That becomes my starting point. If you want to build a business where you want people to invest in, they should see that passion in you that you want to solve that problem.
Yeah, right. So one thing that I have also established is that you need to have a vision to your, and you need to have an end game there. You can't just start a company on and expect key, you know what, as we are going through it, we'll figure out. Like, it's not that the destination is something that you figure out on your journey. You need to at least have some vision of what you want to achieve with your company, because the startup culture, Prashant, in very recent times has become very cool. Okay, it's a very get rich quick scheme, because we are seeing people raising funding and their companies getting valued at an X amount, which is huge, and it's just a very lucrative option. But yeah, I think I completely agree with your point, where that, you know, the vision that drives a person and the person who's driving the company, they both become a very important part over here.
You start a business because there is a problem that you want to solve, and that problem that you want to solve is not letting you sleep. Okay. Once you decide what problem you want to solve, and if it doesn't let you sleep, you become an entrepreneur and try and solve that problem. You start taking a small step. Where that step will lead to is next. What you read about in papers, people raising valuation. Nobody gives capital to vision. Okay. We have a saying in our private equity business that vision without execution is hallucination. So I have not seen a single entrepreneur, even in this crazy today's world, where vision will get backed by money. No, it doesn't happen. Money will only chase execution. So if you cannot execute the vision that you are building, you have no hope in hell to even raise 1 rupee. And execution comes from your passion. How badly do you want to solve the problem? If somebody tomorrow, you know, builds a business because his vision is to, you know, make a unicorn, and at that time he will exit, there is no hope in hell for that person, because unicorns don't get built overnight. Unicorns get built because there is a problem you are solving, and you have demonstrated to the investing public that you have executed in solving the problem at some scale. You take the example of Baiju. What is the problem that Baiju was trying to solve? Baiju was trying to solve the problem that in India, there are plethoras of schools where the quality of education is very poor. He could not take his expertise of teaching to millions of people, because he used to teach in a small school where there were about 200, 300 students, and people will line up and queue up to kind of take his tuitions. He meets Ravindra Pai of Manipal, who sees this passion in him, and he says, "Yaar, the way you are teaching needs to go to millions of people." Gives him small capital and tells him, "You are solving a problem. The problem is much bigger than what you are envisaging. This is not a problem of your village. This is a problem of this country. Can you and I join hands and solve this problem big way? How do you do this? Through technology, by converting the content into..." And it is only when he converted his knowledge into content, got a few 100,000 students, then where the funding started coming. So the vision for me does not hold too much of a grandness. For me, when we invest, if you want somebody else to invest in your business, your proof of concept has to be strong. Your execution has to be strong. Every day when you go to sleep, you should, you know, there should be a certain amount of urge to wake up and go back and do something else the next day to solve the same problem that you were seeing. So vision or end in mind is not the best way to attract investment. Execution, the fact that this is the problem, this is how big the problem is, and this is what I have done to solve this problem. Yet I maybe have taken the first step to solve the problem. There are 1,000 more steps. That's what we in investing world call it as an opportunity. How big is the problem? And is this problem getting bigger? And which is what Baiju's tried to explain to investors. That guys, every single day, there are X number of kids being born in a country like India. My market keeps growing, not every day, but every second, because there are X number of birth taking place in a country like India. After about 8 or 10 years, this is the fodder for my business. Now, if you look at it from an investor's perspective, he has a market which is not just big, but it's also growing every single day. And yet, he is currently a leader by far in his ability to connect with these students. His execution has been so far very good. So I will put money in this. And what started at a 500 crore valuation, last he was valued at $18 billion. The jump from 500 crores to 18 billion did not happen because of vision. It happened because of execution. So to me, vision has no meaning. It's only execution, execution, execution.
So when we say this execution, let's say if we have a startup which is selling a product or a service. As an investor, and if let's say we are going for the first round of investments, so I've seen that many people, and there have been many. So the problem of current internet is that we have a lot of information where a lot of people who are very underqualified to talk about it, right? So we have seen this a lot. There is just so many blueprints, and there are so many prototypes of how to build a startup where they say that, you know, if you're going for an investor, you need to have a foolproof plan. But in that foolproof plan, there are two major components that I feel are very less talked about and not talked about in too much detail. One being the actual working prototype and actual results, like, you know, a proof of concept, as you said, right? Your product, you should, you know, at least build a prototype of a product and test it out. You should believe in the actual, you know, result or evaluation of the product before you can get someone else to believe in it. And the second is the very important part, which actually precedes the first one. It is market research. So as a person who's creating a product, Prashant, and in the later part of the podcast, we're also going to talk about your book, where you have talked a lot about your own venture. But I think this is one part that you also emphasized was, which was market research, right? So how do you go about it, and what should be the right approach towards it?
And there cannot be a common approach to that. First, you have to figure out or identify what your product or your service is. Basis that, you start doing some work. See, first level is always anecdotal evidence. Okay. So in my case, when I started my sports sneaker business or a sports shoe business, I wanted to give India a truly Indian sports brand like a Nike, but an Indian Nike, much more affordable. The anecdotal evidence that I got when I was a half marathoner and I would run with a group of 120 people. The anecdotal evidence at that point of time was that people were looking for alternatives to a Nike, Adidas, Reebok, Puma, which were expensive. So you start by whatever your product or service is to search for anecdotal evidence to see whether a problem exists or not. You talk to people. You go and meet people. And when I say people, who you think could be your customer for the product or the service, and test that hypothesis. Yaar, I see this is a problem. And I think this is a very large problem I can solve. Do you see this as a problem? So your first level of research starts with talking to your friends or families or whoever are you think are the customers for that product or for that service. Once you start getting a lot of positive response to that, yaar, sahi mein problem hai, sahi mein problem hai, yaar, main bhi ye soch raha tha types. You start begin to get a sense that, okay, I think I'm in the right direction. Then you take it one notch higher. When you take it one notch higher, you ask your friends and families to probably then introduce you to 50 or 100 people who they know, and you will then go and meet these people and talk about the same thing. And that time when you go and meet and talk them, you have a small, some kind of a questionnaire to which you are seeking answers. The problem exists in your head. You've got the first round of a tick by talking to your close friend that that problem exists. Now I'm enlarging my sample size to say 100, 150 people.
Yes.
One thing you have to be very sure is you go to that 100, 150 people who you think could be your target customers. Lot of times we intellectualize the problem. I will go to people who may not be my customers, at which point of time I may get replies, but those replies are not relevant to me. And I'll give you my example. When I was doing my research, I went and spoke to 100, 150 people who were like me. Whereas when I made the product and the pricing, I was not my own customer. I write about this mistake in my book, that I thought I was my own customer for my product, whereas I was not. I was targeting somebody who was earning 20, 30,000 rupees a month. So I was not my own customer. So when you increase your sample size to do your research, you should ensure that you are going to the right audience who you think your customer is. If at that point of time you think, okay, I think out of these 150 people that I met, I think 100, 120 people feel this problem exists. That's where somewhere you get your eureka moment. Boss, kuch to dam hai apne idea mein. And that's where you start thinking about what is your next step in terms of building that prototype. For me, your proof of concept is extremely critical. And for that proof of concept, you have to put your own money. That's another thing that is important. You should have skin in the game. A lot of people want to do, and I get written after I've written the book, people write to me, I want to start a business, can you fund me? Then I ask him, why do you think your business will succeed? And they will give me a 15-minute commentary on how good their business is. And then I ask them, if so good is your business, why don't you put your house on mortgage and put money and start? No, that is very risky. Your own money is risky, my money is not risky. नहीं सर, आपके पास तो बहुत पैसा है. अरे भाई, पैसा कमाया लुटाने के लिए तो नहीं कमाया है. So I think these are some of the things people have to understand. People who are extremely passionate about the product or service, or they really think they have something, the last thing they want is an investor because they don't want to dilute too early.
Yeah.
It was the same case with me when I started my business. I put everything that I earned in the last 25 years into it because I think I had three aces with me. Three nikke the mere paas. तीन इक्के तो बाजी अपने को जीतनी है अगर मेरे को बाजी जीतनी है तो मैं दूसरे के साथ क्यों शेयर करूं अपने रिटर्न्स
एब्सोल्युटली
सो दीज आर सम ऑफ द थिंग्स पीपल नीड टू कंसीडर बिफोर दैट बिकॉज़ दीज आर सम ऑफ द क्वेश्चंस द इन्वेस्टर विल आस्क इफ आई गो एंड से यार आई एम फ्रॉम अ रिस्पेक्टेबल वेल्दी फैमिली और आई हैव सम अमाउंट ऑफ कैपिटल बट आई डोंट इवन वॉन्ट टू पुट दैट टू रिस्क टू बिल्ड द प्रोटोटाइप शोज मी हाउ कॉन्फिडेंट और नॉन कॉन्फिडेंट यू आर अबाउट द product or the service.
Absolutely. And I think this is a very good point that you have raised here, Prashant, because most people don't realize that this. If you're, let's say, if your idea is good, right? And if you're scared, because hum log ke mind mein na, we have this very motherly approach towards money, right? So people, they're very confident in their idea, but they're still scared to put their money at risk. What they don't realize is if they actually realize that their idea is good, they have tested it out on a very small scale, without actually an active investment, if they're getting an investor for an amount that they can actually afford, they're actually sharing the, like, you know, they're sharing the fruit of their labor with someone else, which is not really the best thing to do. An investor is something that should come in when you think that, you know, it's something that I can't achieve on my own, but at least, you know, if I have some support, would actually get me to an XYZ position, which would be beneficial.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So I'll give you another example. Yesterday, somebody had come to meet me. Okay. These two guys have started a pizza chain in Chandigarh. Okay.
Hmm.
And the thought came from the fact that the pizza that they were eating in Chandigarh, QSR you want to name, I think those pizzas had a lot of oil in it. They were not using cheese. They used mayonnaise, etc. The pizzas were very heavy. You can call it junk, right?
Yeah.
And he says, no, I want to now create a pizza chain where the pizzas are authentic. Where I don't use mayonnaise, I will use cheese. Where I will not use preservative wala sauce, I will actually put the tomatoes in the oven live so that they burst and the sauce gets made inside the oven. My dough will be from heirloom wheat. I will do all of this and my pizzas will still be the same price as Domino's or Pizza Hut. Okay?
Yeah.
So the problem that I am trying to solve is everybody wants to eat pizza, but there are not enough options available for I won't even use the word healthy pizza, but for an authentic pizza.
Yeah.
Pizza is pizza, right?
Yeah.
He started with two outlets and he came to meet me. He wanted some advice on. He exactly the same. I have two outlets. I want to now replicate this to 20 outlets and 20 outlets to 200 outlets. And there is a pizza chain called La Pino's, which has done extremely well in Gujarat. And, you know, I want to, I said, okay, it's a vision ki baat nahi karta, apne execution pe aate, right? So I asked him, boss, bata, how many people are eating your pizza every day? What is your check size? What's your gross margin? What are your expenditure? Are you making money on the two chains, etc. So two pizza chains in Chandigarh doing well. Now they are coming to Bombay. So I asked them and both were reasonably well-to-do kind of bande. And they came through somebody I know. So I knew they were financially decently off, right? So I said, Bombay mein pizza kaha lagaoge? Bola Bandra mein Turner Road mein jagah bhi dekh liye. So I said, how can I help you? Ke investor chahiye mere ko. तो आई सेड वाई इन्वेस्टर चाहिए तो बोलता है नहीं यार वो इन्वेस्टर आ जाएगा मेरे को दो पिज्जा की चेन लगा नहीं है तो दो के चार हो जाएंगे देन आई वांट टू टेक इट टू 20 सो आई सेड तेरी दो पिज्जा चेन चंडीगढ़ में जो लगी है उससे 3x पैसा चाहिएगा टू ओपन इन बैंड्रा ऑन द सक्सेस ऑफ जस्ट टू चेन्स यू वॉन्ट समबडी टू पुट मनी इन बैंड्रा आई सेड हाउ कॉन्फिडेंट आर यू ऑफ योर पिज्जा चेन बींग सक्सेसफुल And he sounded supremely confident as if Bombay has not seen a pizza chain. I asked him, if you are so confident about it, why are you not putting money? And believe me, it didn't strike him because his mindset was always about moving from 2 to 20 to 100. He was thinking investor. The moment I brought him from 20 pizza after 3 years to today, And I said, boss, whether you are able to raise money for the 20 pizza chain can only be done if your Bandra outlet does well. So for you, your make and break moment is the Bandra outlet. If your Bandra outlet does not deliver the kind of numbers, boss, you will not get money for your fourth pizza. So then I asked him, how do you think your Bandra outlet can be profitable? And he kept giving me, ye karenge. I said, nahi. The only way it can get profitable is you have so much skin in the game that you will do everything in your control to make it profitable. I said, the only way to do it is whatever savings you have put it over here. When you know your existence depends on this Bandra ka pizza chain, because you will work so hard to make it work. And if the Bandra pizza chain is successful, your then ability to raise money becomes even more easier. Your not just your success of your pizza chain and its future depends on Bandra, your future depends. And if your future depends on your Bandra unit of pizza chain, put every penny that you have, even if you have to bloody go and sell your mom's jewelry, sell it and put it. Because jab tak wo piche mein aag nahi lagegi na, usko us tarah ki importance nahi doge. And yesterday evening, he sends me a message. And he told me, Prashant, I am doing that. I am mortgaging my house and putting 35 lakhs in that unit. And I told him, now that that mortgage is behind you, you see how hard you work. And then I asked him, now imagine if I had given you that 35 lakh rupees. Would you have worked as hard? And his answer was, no, I would not have. So sometimes it's important to put everything that you have at risk, because that's only is a demonstration of, you know, one, what is your belief in that idea? And if that is your belief, you will do everything to make it happen. And if you can do that, if your proof of concept does well, then there will be enough people to put money behind you, because now they know, you know, the proof of concept, that execution is there.
So Prashant, this one example that you have said, which is, by the way, an excellent example, it brings this another top, you know, just area in my head, which is globalization versus innovation, right? In today's world, innovation, like most of the startup ideas that come up, they are mostly on globalization, because people see an existing idea working in a very small space, which is not theirs. And then they try to make, you know, take it to other places and make it bigger. Right? Or they'll see an idea performing really well in one sector. Like they'll see e-commerce working well on Amazon. Then they'll start e-commerce, but for pillows, e-commerce, but for t-shirt, e-commerce, but for water bottles and whatnot. So what is your take on that? Because I think if you want to actually succeed in the longer run, both ideas are not bad. Globalization would get you the same stuff as an innovation would. But how does it differ in an aspect of a smooth sailing?
Yeah, you must read this book by Manish Pobrai called Dhando Investor. And it answers your question. And he's been a long-time follower of Warren Buffett. And his book, he makes that point that you don't need to be an innovator to create wealth. Okay? You can be a copier of an idea and create massive wealth. And the biggest example he talks about in his book is Reliance Industries. Okay? From Dhirubhai Ambani to today Mukesh Ambani. And every single business that you can think of Reliance, not one business has been an original idea seeded by Reliance. Okay? Right from textiles, which was the domain of Bombay Dyeing during Dhirubhai days, to going backward from textiles to crude oil. To starting Jio, to starting retail, they were never the first one. So they started after the idea's merit was proven. But once they started, Reliance is an execution engine. It's not a vision engine. It's an execution engine. They bloody execute so better than anybody else that they are leagues ahead of others, and their ability to think very big. So I am not of the world that if there is an idea, if you can make that idea work, whether it is in another industry or in the same industry itself, but if you can make it work, you have to always remember, do you know which is the largest company in the world today? Amazon? Do you know what is Amazon's market share of US retail? It's less than 4%, which means 96% Americans are still buying things not from Amazon. Okay? Despite Amazon being now almost the size of India in terms of its market cap, their GDP, their India's GDP is 2.4 trillion. Amazon's market cap is now $2 trillion, right? Despite being so large, they are so small. So it doesn't matter if you can even replicate an idea that's worked for somebody else, but do it well. In any business and industry, you see there will be room for 3-4 players. So I am not of that idea that you have to be an innovator to create wealth or create value. But when you are somebody who's copying somebody else's idea, your execution has to be very, very powerful. I'll give you an idea. We have an investment in a, I'll give you an example. We have an investment in a company called API, which is Farmeasy, the app. Okay. What did Siddharth and his colleagues or friends do? They put up a e-commerce platform for medicines.
Right.
What is the problem that they were solving? The problem that they were solving was so many pharmacies, all these pharmacies selling you fake medicines. You don't know what you are buying. And always there is this problem of going to a pharmacy, kabhi dawai milegi, kabhi nahi milegi, etc., etc., etc. And these the pharmacies that were there, these pharmacies did not have the power because they were fragmented. So they could not negotiate with the pharma companies for better margin. Comes Siddharth and his team, creates an e-commerce platform, but focused only on medicine. I become the e-pharmacy of India. It's the same idea what Jeff Bezos did. Jeff Bezos did with a lot of other things. He did the same idea. And his three pillars are identical to Amazon. My medicines will be the cheapest. I will give you the best customer service. And come what may, I will have the widest choice of medicines. In medicine, he's become so big that even Amazon cannot compete with him in India. So idea he borrowed, he put it to a different industry. But his execution was so flawless that today he's worth whatever, $4-5 billion. So that's the point. The point is not on the idea. It's on your ability to think big and execute the idea.
Right. I think another great example of this would be what Google did, right? Because it came in a market which was, you know, it was taken over it, and standing out over there would have been so difficult. But then it comes, like there were Yahoo, and then comes it, and it just takes the entire thing by the storm. Where, you know, a company that, the company with that once tries to purchase it was, it doesn't even exist anymore. Right? So it's just that. I completely agree. But then in this particular scenario, Prashant, how do we look at monopolies and and how do we compete with the competition? Because there is one thing which you said about the pharmacy part, where they had reached a ground of perfect competition, right? Where if they are always they're so fragmented and they're always competing with each other, that a third party always benefits from that. Same happened with Microsoft and Google, where they kept competing, and Apple is the one that profited off of the complete market. And same is happening as you in the example you stated. How do you as a company avoid that in whichever sector that you're going? And if your sector has a complete current monopoly, what should be your approach to deal with it? Because a lot of people get very scared.
In the world of business, it's ruthless. It's the survival of the fittest. Either you become sharper, more efficient, serve the customer better, or the customer will move. It doesn't matter what business you are in, B2B or B2C. If the customer has another person giving you better choice, better pricing, better customer service, he will move. Yep. But if you continue to provide him good quality, good service, good pricing, why will he move? So the best way to compete is to become bigger. Scale will give you so many advantages which nobody else will have. And which is your game? How big can you think? How big can you become? When Mukesh Bansal and Binny Bansal set up Flipkart, or for that matter, any of these unicorns that have become really big. Zomato went public just now. What is Dipinder's holding in the company? 5%. What is Mukesh Bansal, Bini Bansal's holding in Flipkart when they sold out to Walmart? Same, 4 to 5%. So they realize that in this business, if I have to survive, I have to grow very big. If I have to grow very big, I will need to raise capital. I will keep getting diluted. But my survival is at stake. If my cost of survival is growth, I will grow at any cost. And if I grow at any cost, I will get diluted. But the game that I'm trying to play, and only time will tell whether you are successful or not, is when you scale and grow this big, and when the company becomes really very large, you may end up owning only 5% of that business. You would have created wealth for 95% of the people.
Yeah.
But that's a choice you make, because you know, if I want to own 40% of the business and the business remains very small, the likes of Amazon will come and eat you. And that's the vision that you talk of. I read a book called Jonathan Livingston Seagull by Richard Bach. And there is a very beautiful line in that book, which says the gull that flies highest sees farthest. So these are things that you can't imagine when you are starting the business. All these thoughts will naturally come to you as you become bigger and bigger. Because as you become bigger and bigger, you start facing bigger competition. You will start thinking differently. So somebody who's starting today a business venture does not need to think too much about all of this. His first thing is to establish himself and ensure that he doesn't die. If he remains alive in the jungle, he will figure out a way to survive. And as he moves more into denser jungle, the animals will be different. But because he is now migrated into denser jungle, he's also become stronger. So he will know, he will have the means to fight. You take the example of the Snapdeal founders, Kunal and Rohit. Both these guys, they had a similar business model like Flipkart. At some point of time, they realized that we are getting diluted too much. At some point of time, they faltered on their execution.
Yeah.
And they lost this battle. Because at that point of time, we were only talking of Flipkart and Snapdeal. Amazon was still way behind in the picture. So that is what happens in competition. In business, it's a bad, big, bad world out there. The small will get eaten. The small will get finished. And there is no easy way to say. Either you shape up or you ship out.
Absolutely. So another thing, Prashant, here is that what role does advertising and marketing play in your individual growth apart from the rest of it? I mean, these factors are definitely something that are worth considering. But when it comes to advertising and market placement of a product, how big of a role does that play out?
Massive. I can't even start on this. Again, of course, it will depend on which product. If you're in an industrial product, absolutely no point. But if you are in a consumer facing product, the more amount you spend on marketing over a longer period of time, that is your glue that gets a customer. You tell me, my father invested in Colgate Palmolive way back in 1970. Okay. During the Colgate Palmolive's IPO in India. From 1970, we are in 2021, 41 years of 51 years. Can you imagine the amount of money Colgate has spent on advertising every year? Why is Colgate a household name? Today, if Colgate stops advertising, will you stop buying Colgate?
Absolutely.
No. But Colgate does that because there is something called as a lifetime value of a customer. What is the lifetime value of a customer is his affinity towards your brand. Warren Buffett has said when he bought Geico as a business in US, he says he, in one particular year of Geico, they spent $190 million in marketing or advertising. And because of that, Geico made a loss. So Warren Buffett in his letter to his shareholder wrote that if I will spend only that many dollars in marketing, which gets me a new customer whose lifetime value to me as a business is more than the money I'm spending. He said, I am disappointed we only spent $190 million. I should have sent $400 million. But unfortunately, after $190 million that we spent, the incremental dollar that I was spending was not getting me a customer whose lifetime value to my business was $1. And he says, this is the biggest thing a business can do. Look at Titan today, Tanishq today. There are so many jewelers in this country, right?
Right.
Why has Tanishq become so big? Because of their investment in brand. And the name Tata represents trust. So, if you have a consumer-facing business, you have to invest in brand. I don't say marketing expenditure. It is an investment. I work for Burger King. In Burger King, we are mandated to spend 5% of our revenues on marketing. It's part of the contract. Why? Because the longevity of the brand Burger King is a function of every month that I spend money and take Burger King brand to television. The day I stop this, my customer will start eating somewhere else. And I don't even want to lose that one customer. So it is extremely important. When we were analysts, when I used to work with Rakesh Jhunjhunwala, we used to look at EBITDA of a company or the operating profit of the company. We used to see operating profit before marketing expenditure. That was the real operating profit. There was a year, I remember, when Dabur was under so much of pressure by analysts because they were not showing higher profits. That Dabur decided for 2 years to reduce their marketing spend. Okay? In that 2 years that they reduced marketing spend, Dabur's profit went up. Obviously.
Yeah.
But after those 2 years, their market share began to decline. So what they did was to show higher profit so that their market price would go up. After 2 years, the market punished them so badly because they started losing market share because they did not spend money on marketing. So that is the power of marketing. Yeah, there is no easy way to say it hurts you because the money that you spend today on marketing, the results will come after a few years. But that result are so far long term and so far reaching that people who can muster the courage to invest in marketing, you will see those companies will have far longer duration.
Right. I think that you made some excellent points here, Prashant. And to conclude this, I want to quickly jump to your book that was The Biography of a Failed Venture, right? And over there, I've gone through the book and I think I was pretty amazed. And it was really fascinating to see someone talk about failure in such a raw form, because it is a very less talked about subject. Every day we see more failures than successful stories around us. But actually the ones who make it big are the more lucrative ones, right? But the way you've spoken about failure in your book, I think it's really, it gives a reality check to everyone. And it's not a very pessimistic book either. It's just a very realist book, and it takes optimism to a more real level, where you should be excited about your product and you're showing enthusiasm and optimism about your venture all throughout. But you also showed the ground picture, where you're talking about how you actually, learned from the best, where the people who were your mentor, Kishore Biyani and who not. But then you see how you face it. I'm not going to say much about it. I'm going to let others read it. But I just want to say, I just want you to give a little context on how what was your failure story and how it changed your perception towards failure, and what did you come to know about society's perception of failure?
Yeah, first of all, thank you so much for buying and reading the book and obviously talking about it on your podcast. So so for me, in 2017, I decided to become an entrepreneur after spending 23, 24 years in the corporate world, where not just did I make money, but I actually made a lot of money. And my greed for money was so high that I wanted to, my net worth to go from 20 crores to 2,000 crores. That is the kind of vision I wanted to dream. And I saw the way to move from 20 to 200, my first target. I could not have done that by being an investor. So I said the only way to do this is by becoming entrepreneur. I was also, like so many people today, got enamored by what I was reading in Economic Times in terms of businesses and the way they were getting valued. And I said, if I am even reasonably successful, I probably 200 dreams or 200 crores I will make in 5 years time or 10 years time. So my business started on the wrong footing. I did not start the business because I was passionate about the product or about the service. I started the business because I wanted to create wealth. Create wealth can be a goal, but it cannot be a purpose. And without purpose, there cannot be any business, is what I learned later the hard way. But what happened is I started in 2017. But one thing I will tell your viewers or listeners that once I decided to commit to this, I left no stone unturned. I probably, in my view, even today, believe we built a kick-ass product. We had a, it was a sports shoe company, very similar to a Nike or Adidas or a Reebok, where the idea was to give you a product which was in between a Bata and a Nike, a mid-price point, very, very technology-intensive shoe. Our design center was in Portland in USA. We had a whole development center in China. And because sports shoe is something that one needs to wear it to feel it, because that is something which directly impacts your knee. Rather than just selling online, we opened 17 stores in 7 cities in 3 months' time. That is how confident we were about the product. We spoke about building the brand. We invested a lot of money in a brand. So we had Hardik Pandya, Anil Kumble, Farhan Akhtar as our brand ambassadors. Our first campaign, Diwali campaign, was 4 crore of rupees. That's the money we spent. In our view, we did everything right. And despite that, my business lost 30 crores in 30 months. So that was the velocity of the fall. Our launch was on 21st August 2018. And on 21st August 2019, after losing 30 crores, I shut the business down. And immediately after I shut the business down, I went and joined private equity firm Everstone Capital, and then was seconded onto Burger King. I got busy with the Burger King IPO, so on and so forth. I did not get the time. It was my way of hiding behind this colossal failure of my entrepreneurial venture. But as luck would have it, come February, March, we all got hit by COVID. And we were all under lockdown, the first famous lockdown. Yeah. And when you are under lockdown, you have a lot of time in hand. And that is the time, the first phase of my lockdown, I spent time just watching Netflix and doing time pass and some work. But after a while, how much Netflix can you watch? Yeah. And that's where I started reading. I anyways used to love reading. I'd like lost touch with reading, but then I got back into reading. And it was while reading a thought that occurred to me. And I started reflecting back on why DeFi failed. The first phase was about denial. I did not want to accept the fact that I failed. I was always trying to put the blame on someone. It was as if the whole universe has conspired against me and my business. And when that first phase of denial went away, what emerged were only facts, right? And when I then looked deeper into it and when I saw my daughters, one question kept coming back to me. Prashant, this is not your wealth that you have destroyed. It is their wealth that you have destroyed. At least I owe an explanation to my daughters why their dad lost so much of their money. I needed to be honest about it. So what I did is I started writing down. The first was just writing down the mistakes that I thought I made. And when I was writing down those mistakes, I also wanted to see what other people have written about mistakes. Are there any similarity to the mistakes I made? And being an equity research background at time during lockdown, I started doing a lot of research on trying to find out entrepreneurs like me who made mistakes like me. But that's when I unfortunately realized that, you know, there aren't people who are writing about mistakes. Mistakes, when I spoke to people, talked, one thing kept coming back, that in our society, mistakes are looked down upon. There is a certain word that I use in my book called moral degeneracy. There is morality attached to mistakes. You look down upon people who have made mistakes. And it starts with our school, right? If you make a mistake, your teacher will punish you. So mistakes are presented to us in the form that these are bad, evil. They are not the rams of the world. Mistakes are the ravens of the world. And as a result of this, the whole society kind of tries to hide mistake very fast. I read a lot of books on neurobiology, and they say everything, you know, every minute there is a certain billion bits of information that comes to our brains. Brain acts like a deleting device. You can only remember few things. So what the brain does, what it thinks is not important, it just deletes. And, you know, the way brain stores information is such that whatever is important is stored in a manner that you can access that. So today, if I were to tell you, Harsh, which is your most happiest moment in life, it will be easy for your brain to go and retrieve that information because it is important. It has stored it in an important folder. Mistakes, because they are seen as something bad, brain puts it so far away that we as a society, we don't even want to revisit our mistakes. We don't want to look at our mistakes. But when I looked at my life and I saw that I lost my father when I was 7 years old, and somebody who did not have a father, who do you look up to? And when I actually went into that level of thinking, I realized my biggest teacher in my life has been mistakes. Every mistake that I have made in my life has taught. And I said, if mistakes has this big a power to teach, why are mistakes not the cornerstone or center stage? Why are mistakes not being spoken about? It's the biggest guru that you have. And that's when an idea started forming, and I started writing about these mistakes for my daughters. The first level was only writing about these mistakes. This is a mistake I did. I started the business for money. Wrong. It should have been started for a purpose. But then I went one level deep and two levels deep. But why? Why was money so important to me? And when I went to the second and third levels of why, a very different thought process emerged. You were then being, if I can use the word, almost being naked to yourself. You were being very brutally honest. That greed had to do with me losing my father. Because when I lost my father, and we were very, very poor when I was, you know, growing up, when I would see my friends going out for a meal, we spoke about puchka early. Eating puchka in a city like Calcutta was a luxury that we would get once in 3 or 6 months. We were so poor. And because I was so poor very early in my life, one thing became very core of who I am, that growing up, I will never be poor again. I wanted to be rich. I wanted to be very rich. And that DNA change that happened during my childhood was the reason I wanted my 20 to become 200 and 200 to become 2000 crores. So I then went deeper into every mistake as to why I made those mistakes. And when I started noting all those down, you know, you were writing. And that's where the thought came here. It looks interesting. Can this become a book? And can, if, and you know, Gandhiji has this quote, be the change you wish to see. If my wish is to see that change where mistakes, you know, are spoken, where mistakes are celebrated, where the other people can learn from other people's mistakes, then I will have to do something about it, right? Be the change you wish to see. So I said, okay, then why not write a book? So I kind of, it took a form of a book. I went to HarperCollins. They agreed to publish the book, and hence the book happened here.
That's a very inspiring story, Prashant. And I think many of us who are even listening to it right now will be able to relate to it. So, yeah, and if at today's point, Prashant, if there is one thing that you could do differently and have the same business come on board, what would be it? I agree that you have already established that, you know, you started it, your hope was to build wealth. But let's say if you had to do one thing differently apart from that today, what would it be?
So two things, not one thing. First thing, if I were to now restart this piece, I will ask myself, am I really passionate about the product or the service that I'm trying to sell? It goes back to the first question we discussed on the podcast. Yes. I will not start the business if I'm starting the business to make money. That's the wrong start. I will start the business if I think there is a problem that I am solving and I'm very passionate about solving the problem. And if the answer to that will be a no, I will not take the first step also. The second thing, assuming the answer to that is yes, I will try to set up business like running a marathon. In my previous venture, I tried to run my business. And any business is a marathon. I tried to run the marathon like a 100-meter race. I was in a terrible hurry to get rich quick. And as a result of this, I took the high risk, high reward bet. I opened 17 stores in 7 cities in 3 months. There was no gun on my head to do that. I could have started with 2 stores, make mistakes, learned, course corrected, then scaled up. But I was so much in a hurry. And also my arrogance was so high that I thought I had 3 aces in my hand. And I said, yaar, teen ikka hai, toh you have to go all in, right? I can't be then playing in the back foot. Fact of the matter is, forget teen ikka. My cards were blind. I did not even know what cards I had. But I thought that these are 3 ikka. So, yeah, the second thing I would change is if I were passionate about a product, if I start, I will now start small. Oh. I share in my book a story of DMart and Future Group. Yep. And I share that story about the tortoise and the rabbit. And I say, in the end, the tortoise always wins. Because business is a marathon, it doesn't matter. Even if you start small. But once you perfect your business model, then nobody can touch you. Nobody can beat you. So, yes, these are the 2 things I would change here.
Yeah, I feel like we missed out on one very important topic which came to my mind when you spoke about who you started your venture with, which was if you're starting a startup. I think another important part is starting it with the right people. It's kind of like a marriage, right? If you're starting a product with someone, and a divorce is not going to just cost you a shit ton, but there are a lot of people on the stake who are going to suffer from it. So that is one thing. And you like the idea that you have in your head, the baby, that somewhere suffers as well.
Yeah. And if you look at successful businesses, whether it is Infosys, Reliance, you spoke about Google, Microsoft, even Amazon, most of these businesses, you would see it, there will be 2 or 3 or more people behind this. I spoke about Farmies, there are 5 people behind it. Flipkart, there were 2 people behind it. So yes, you need a strong partner with you when you start something, because as you start and embark, and if you are even reasonably successful, there will be so much of work that it's important that you have somebody with you along the way who you trust.
Yeah, and it's also that, if you're growing a company, it's not just about the co-founder or the person you're finding it with. It's also about the nature of people that you employ. Because if you're talking about a huge corporation, there are a lot of things, like a lot of this blank spaces and these bottlenecks that they have. They have internal politics, they have internal discussions, a lot of stakeholders and whatnot. So a lot of work is like, not a lot of work gets done in a small amount of time. But when it's a startup, right, you need self-starter people. You need people to believe in your idea as well as much as you do. They need to be actively engaged in contributing to it, in creating something that actually, resonates, and like having a belief or, wanting to create something that resonates with you. So it's a lot of things. I think having the team is an integrated part of the story that everyone knows, but the significance of it is huge.
Absolutely. Yeah. Hold up.